1935. We have with us Senator McGuire, Stevens, Huggins, and my good friend Tom Wagner from Kenai, Lower Matsu, I think.
Upper Cook.
Southern Lower Matsu.
Southern Cookout.
Yeah. And we have two items today. One, which I am assuming we will ease through rather quickly, which is a CS for House Bill 267, Wildlife Violators Compact. And Jeannie, if you would come forward, please, and put yourself on the record, and let's see what we have to move forward with.
My name is Jeannie Austin. I'm staff to Representative Craig Johnson. And yesterday, I think we spoke a little bit about the database, and from what I understand, the open records law that we have in this state puts these people on the court system's computers, and all the Wildlife Violator Compact is doing is duplicating that onto their database.
Right.
And one other thing is that the adults only are going on to the database, no matter what the age is per state that a person has to receive fishing license or a hunting license. In our state, it's 16. They would not go on until they were considered an adult in our state or any other state.
And what's the definition of adult in Alaska?
18.
18? Okay, good, good. Okay, questions or comments from members? Okay. Just as a reminder, we ended abruptly the other day because we were trying to figure that issue out. I thought it would be more efficient that we just go do that and then come back, and I think we're at that point. So we need to get a bring a version O before us.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt version O for House Bill number 267.
Okay. Is there objections to that? Hearing none. Oscar is before us at this time. The will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CS for House Bill number 267 with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note out of this committee.
Very good. Any final comments? No objections? Okay. Committee's moved to next, what, to finance?
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you and congratulations. Okay. Next, we will move to NSTAR. And the presenters will be, I guess, Mr. Curtis there and Colleen Starring and Jean Dubay. Yeah, very good. And I'm looking around the room here. I see, oh, my good friend, Representative Jay Rammers from Fairbanks. Good to have you with us. And to a moment so you can get organized, I would like to give Jay some credit for really getting out front on the issue of trying to make sure that Fairbanks and its people, which most of us realize pays an extraordinarily high rate to heat their houses and do some other things because of the cost of energy. And I'm always amazed at the thoughtfulness in Representative Rammers' approach to that. And I say thank you for that. Hopefully we can help you in that endeavor because it's important. In that respect, I think we have one other utility company with us. Is that correct here today? Very good. That's Chugach Electric? Yeah, very good. Do we have any representatives here from the administration? Because this is extremely important. Hopefully they're watching on television because we are going to be talking about bringing energy to the demographic center through Fairbanks and along the Parks Highway, potentially, if you will. So with that, NSTAR, take it away.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Huggins, committee members. My name is Colleen Starring, Regional Vice President for NSTAR Natural Gas. Seated to my right, your left, is Jean Dubay, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for our holding company, Continental Energy Systems. And all of you know Curtis Thayer, Director of Corporate Communications and External Affairs.
Okay, pull your microphone a little bit closer.
All right.
There you go. Good.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss a number of things today. First of all, the status of NSTAR's gas supply contracts, and then some midterm and long-term goals that we have as a result of those contract negotiations. First, I think all of you are familiar, but I'll go over who we are. We were established in 1961. We currently serve 128,000 customers, 80% of the state's population. We have 3,000-plus miles of distribution and transmission main, which we operate and maintain. The direct impact through our capital budget, O&M budget, and the amount of gas we sell to our residential and commercial customers is $306 million a year. We currently employ 174 people. That number rises in the summer months due to construction to over 60 to 80 construction employees. We're first among Alaska's utilities, the only natural gas utility, and we added 2,400 customers to the system in 2007. This next
Senator Wagner?
Are these employees, these seasonal temporaries, are these contract personnel or are these personnel that you employ through NSTAR?
We employ them through NSTAR.
Okay, thank you.
The next is just a map of our South Central and the distribution system. The dark heavy blue line are NSTAR's gas lines. The red line is the lines that are either owned by the producers and some of them operated by NSTAR. And the yellow line are the gathering line, gathering systems. The purple dots that you see on the map are the known or existing gas fields where the current supply comes from. This is a cost comparison. We like to show this slide because although the cost or the residential bills have increased dramatically in the last few years, all of you are well aware that those costs are not due to NSTAR's costs. In 1998, the cost that NSTAR had to the customer for the delivered product was $1.92. 10 years later, in 2008, our delivered cost is $1.70. I mean, those reductions have been achieved through operating efficiencies. What we've all seen is the cost of the commodity itself, which is a direct pass-through to the customer. NSTAR derives no profit from that, has risen dramatically, 80%. In 2008, the average residential bill was $1,483, but NSTAR's portion of that was only $294. Conversely, back in 1998, the residential cost per month was $675 and NSTAR, $675 a year, and NSTAR's share of that was $352. So our costs have decreased over a 10-year period. Right now, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Dubay, who's going to talk about our current gas contracts and where we are in terms of those.
Yes, thank you, Senators. We're looking.
Gene, if you would just put yourself on the record. So,
yes, sir. I'm Gene Dubay, Senior Vice President of Continental Energy Services.
Good. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
Senator
you,
Wagner.
Could I have you give us a little background on Continental Energy Systems or Services?
Continental Energy Services is the holding company that owns SEMCO Energy, which is the gas utility that serves approximately 300,000 customers in the state of Michigan, and NSTAR, which is Colleen's described, serves the customers here in the state of Alaska. The holding company has also entered into an agreement to buy most of the gas customers in the state of New Mexico from Public Service New Mexico. That transaction's been entered into, and it's been filed at the commission. The docket is open on that transaction at the commission in New Mexico.
Are you a publicly traded company, or are you a privately held?
We're a privately held company, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, please continue.
And as Colleen mentioned, we've got a near-term requirement that we're going to talk about, an intermediate term, and a long-term requirement. In the near-term requirement on this graph that we have in front of us, we're talking about the shaded black and white area from 2009 through 2013, where we have an unmet requirement. In the contracts that we're entering into contracts to deal with this unmet requirement in this time period. And our principles in looking at this, you know, in negotiating these agreements is we want to have a safe and reliable supply for the community. We want to have the lowest price possible. We've talked about our rationale. The lower the price, the more our customers use, and we want a price ultimately that encourages the continued interest in the producing community and continue to develop reserves to provide for our customers. Our gas supply contract timeline, you know, coming out of the last round of negotiations in February of 07, we solicited new proposals through an RFP process. We began to negotiate in March of 2007. And those negotiations, I might say, really didn't get a good footing until the administration, the producers, saw a way to extend the license on the LNG plants. And as we see there today, we expect in the next couple of weeks to have signed agreements. We have essentially clean agreements, but they haven't been approved at the appropriate levels, and we expect to file these agreements in a couple of weeks with the commission here in Alaska.
Yeah, Senator Wagner.
You have signed agreements, but they haven't been approved at the appropriate level. What do you mean by that?
We have clean agreements, but they're not signed yet at this point in time.
So that means that they're negotiated?
We've negotiated
and
the agreements.
And you reviewed them?
They're negotiated, and we're going to sign them. We expect that they're going to be signed by the producers. There are no remaining business issues, to the best of my knowledge.
And just for clarification of that, then, the RCA process?
When we get the agreement signed, which we anticipate in a couple of weeks, we will file those agreements with the RCA. And the RCA has a process through which they go through to approve those agreements.
Right. In the timeline for RCA now?
We're hopeful that we'll have those agreements approved in October of this year.
Good. Good. Okay. Please continue. Sorry, Senator Wagner.
Yeah, I read that here. What happens if you don't get those agreements approved by October? You know, I think the last agreement that was in front of RCA was turned down, was it not?
Yes.
So what happens if either one or both of these are turned down when they go in front of RCA and are reviewed? Now, I'm not finding fault with you or whoever, but I'm just saying this process leaves a lot of things out there to be questioned.
I agree, and I don't know. Producers will have an out if we don't have timely approval. Whether they will exercise that out, I can't speak for them. Ideally, we will get approval. Ideally, they won't exercise an out if it's not as timely as we would hope, but I can't forecast what their behaviors will be.
Mr. Chairman, so if they have an out, that means they can walk away from the negotiated contract. And what would they do then with that gas? Would they look for other commercial customers, or?
I can't speak for them, and I'm not sure. But part of this, and I don't want to speak to their interests, and I can only speak to what they tell us. But they have to do certain things with their infrastructure, and part of their concern is that they would have an agreement with us. And they would have to deliver on that agreement, so they have to have certain infrastructure things done. And if they don't have the agreement approved in a timely fashion, the question is, would they spend whatever is required? And I don't know what's on their side with regard to doing the things that they need to do for the infrastructure. The answer probably is yes, if they're going to stand by the agreement. If they don't do those things and they stand by the agreement, they leave themselves open to having breached the agreement, because we will have expectations. So in theory, if we sign the agreement a day before they're supposed to deliver to us and haven't done things with regard to the infrastructure, then they could conceivably breach the agreement because they won't be able to meet their requirements. So I believe that's what they've described as their conundrum in trying to move forward.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Gene, let me ask you, just so that we got the tone of this about right. I'm optimistic that this is going to happen. Am I being realistic enough in my optimism?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you.
I guess.
Yes, Senator Wagner.
I guess I'm not quite that optimistic, Mr. Chairman, because I've seen these things go in the ditch before. But what happens to your customers that you're contracted with to supply gas if you don't get these agreements approved? What is your fallback position? What will you do?
I think we've got two potential outcomes. If we don't have agreements approved in a timely fashion, we have there may be a legal path to force a resolution, which I'm not a lawyer and I can't speak very articulate to. And the other path is that we begin to talk about curtailment and how we would deliver less on peak days than what we feel we're required to deliver.
Okay, thank you.
Again, let the record show that Senator Wilkowski and Senator Green has joined us. Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Yes, sorry, Emily. The 2.1 BCF shortfall, what's the how long? Is that per year? Or
that's we had to go back a couple of slides. But, no, that's the two. We go back to the bar graph. And the 2 BCF shortfall is in 2009, and that ramps up in 2010, 11, and 12 and 13, respectively. So that shortfall grows in time.
But that's per year.
Yes. Initially, it's two BCF. The total of the gas under contract. The next couple slides up is 37 BCF.
Thank you.
Okay. And the supply contracts that we're talking about, a couple of the salient points is these supply contracts are subject to the DOE approval of the LNG export authorization. They also have NSTAR is required under these agreements. We have some burden with regard to deliverability, which means by 2011 we have to have a storage service. We either have to develop that service or purchase that service from others. These contracts don't have what used to be referred to as the full requirements obligation, so there's some obligation on the utility going forward. We've agreed with the producers to work with the DNR for acceptance of the price to be paid as the value of the state's royalty gas. And again, NSTAR's target for RCA approval is October of this year. We have
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the average of the average per MCF that you're paying now for your gas, and what do you expect it to be? What will you be asking the RCA to approve?
The average is about $7, but the that's $8 delivered.
Yeah,
$8 delivered, and so we're paying about $7 for the gas, and it's $8 delivered. But that's an index price, and these contracts are index related. So what we're paying is for most of the gas that we buy today in index price, and these contracts are index related with a trailing index average. So the agreements will follow the index. So we don't, if the index were to stay flat, these agreements wouldn't have a significant additional cost to what we pay today. If the index run up, the price goes up. If the index goes down, the price goes down. We will talk we will address in what we file with the RCA our ability to hedge these contracts and take some of the volatility out of that. Now, ultimately, if you're buying gas off an index and that index continues to move up, your price will move up. But if you're buying off of an index and you want to take some of the volatility off of that index, you can hedge those prices such that if you have, let's say, a cataclysmic event that affects the price for a couple of months, you can hedge that volatility out. And we'll address that in our filing with the RCA.
Okay, Senator Wilkowski.
And then, so you're indexing, I'm assuming, to a Henry Hub type of index, which is now almost $10 an MCF. But Henry Hub, or probably many of the other indexes, are for gas that's very liquid, gas that can be sold to many different pipelines, whereas here, the Cook Inlet gas you're buying is stranded.
Well, the index that we use won't be a Henry Hub index. But the, you know, let me use an analogy. When I'm here about once a month, and when I'm here in the summertime, I pay north of $300 a night for a hotel room. And normally that hotel room is more like $100 a night, and a lot of other places where I go, it might be $100 a night on the same, maybe $150 on the same summer evening. But the hotels have me captured in the summertime, and I pay for it. One thing I would say, and I'm not an advocate for the producers, but these contracts that are index related, we're not paying more than a utility in Oklahoma, Texas, or Michigan. So I don't feel that in these negotiations that the producers have taken advantage of any lack of liquidity in this market.
Well, if I could follow up, do you know what the cost to extract the gas is?
I do not.
I've heard it's about a dollar or less.
I have no idea.
Okay, continue on, please.
Yes, sir. Our contracts, as I mentioned, there's two contracts. The take us through 2013 with our unmet requirement, and the total volume under these contracts is approximately 37 BCF. We have a pricing structure that's index related. We'll get a discount for what we refer to as base load gas. We'll have some premium for what we refer to as seasonal and needle peak gas, and those volumes are graphed in this presentation. So really, there's not much gas, much volume that we purchase in the needle peak volumes, and those are the volumes that we're talking about that ultimately we're going to have to develop storage for. Which, when we look forward in these contracts, we're going to have a storage requirement in 2011. Initially, we'll only have to have approximately a little bit over a half a BCF, but that will climb. And in 2013, we have to have 1.3 BCF coming out of storage to meet our requirements in the community.
Yeah. Could we go back to the to tier pricing and kind of walk us through that, if you would?
Yes, sir. There's a, you know, it's typical that the utilities pay for there's more infrastructure required for the unusual days when you have your highest demand. That gas is often, you know, most often coming out of storage or some other peaking facility, and there's more value associated with that gas. In these negotiations, we have ended up with tiered pricing, that and those tiers reflect to some extent the cost of that gas that is at those needle peaks. Conversely, the gas that we take every day through the summertime should cost us less. There's less infrastructure required there. And that gas, there will be an incentive for us to fill storage with that gas that's essentially baseload gas that we can take in the summertime at a flat rate. It's more easily produced, less infrastructure requirement for that gas, and there will be a difference in pricing between those tiers.
Yeah. Now, are you going to talk to us about storage a little later on in more depth?
Yes.
Now?
At this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Colleen, who's going to talk about storage. And again, we're looking at storage as sort of our intermediate term requirement.
Thank you. As the previous charts indicated, 2011, NSTAR has a shortfall of less than a BCF of gas, so we have been analyzing any options that we have available to us in order to shore up this shortfall. We've looked at acquiring infield storage, existing fields in South Central, and we believe that the costs associated with that are around $50 million to develop infield storage. This would be a a solution for NSTAR. We believe it's the most cost-effective solution for NSTAR, and that's what we are pursuing at this point as our number one option. It's the least labor-intensive as far as getting a plant online and ready to go. The next one...
Colleen, before you pass that up, the $50 million, what do you buy for $50 million?
Perhaps the you get the rights to the storage reservoir, the field itself, and then the gas that you purchase and the compression and vaporization equipment associated with that storage field to get it to our lines and to our customers. When we look at infield storage, it's not a solution for NSTAR for large volumes of gas. It would purely be something that would assist us during these peak seasonal needs.
Well, and when you say, also let me add, when Colleen speaks of the gas that goes in the field, we're talking about a lot of gas that you never take out, that cushion gas that is a big slice of the cost that we're talking about in storage, gas right. that you put into cushion and doesn't come out.
And just so that the people at home understand and get the right connotation, we're not talking about a tank farm someplace. We're talking about pumping it into a cavity in the ground.
Correct.
Okay.
Most of these are existing gas reservoirs that are depleted or very little deliverability left in them, and we could utilize them to fill with gas for our seasonal peak needs.
Right. Senator Wagner and Senator Wodelkowski.
On a typical field, I don't know whether it is a typical field or not, but what percentage of the gas do you recover after you put, say, 50... million cubic feet of gas in? What percentage of that stays in the field, and what percentage can you recover?
I think what I do know is it depends on the characteristics of the field itself.
But is there an average?
We have a storage engineer or reservoir engineers looking at that right now. They've come up with different numbers depending on which fields we're looking at. We should have more data on this, obviously, in the next few months. We're not that far yet, but it really is the characteristics of the field determine what's in there and what's left.
Okay, Senator Wodelkowski.
Does the fact that you don't have this storage reservoir cause the price of gas to be higher than it is now, than it would necessarily be because of the spikes?
Well, currently the producers are taking care of this deliverability need that, you know, in essence, they have storage available to them. In the past, that's what we've relied on in these contracts that we term full requirements contract. And as we've moved through these negotiations, the environment's changed, and, you know, that's incumbent upon NSTAR to take care of its needs long term.
Right, but I remember hearing somewhere, I may have been in discussions with you all, that because you have these spikes, that causes you to have to go out and pay more for your gas. Is that an accurate statement?
You would pay what we term a reservation or a fee to hold that gas available, yes.
How much more do you pay than you would otherwise pay?
I don't know what currently we're paying in our current contract, Senator. I could find out.
Yeah. But just for clarification, as I recall on your tier pricing structure, the base tier for that gas that's stored would be by definition more base tier kind of pricing level, so it does by implication imply a lower rate.
Yes, mm-hmm. We would fill storage in a summer off-peak period with gas that would be in the base tier or a discount to that base tier.
Okay.
Just one quick follow-up then. I guess what I'm getting at is if you spend $50 million to acquire this, what kind of cost savings can the consumers expect to see? Because you won't have to pay that premium. Have you figured that out?
Not at this point, no.
We will know the difference between what the base gas cost is, what we fill the gas as far as the a difference to the index. So it'll come out at what we had paid going in the summertime. That index, let's say, could be, you know, let's say 1.0 times an index, and it's as opposed to 1.5 that might have been the cost of the seasonal of the needle peak gas. So, you know, where the index is will give us an absolute dollar, which we won't know until the day we put it in and the day we take it out. But we'll know that what the difference is in the contract between the index price and that needle peak and the index price that we put the gas in.
Right. And the other phenomena, I guess by implication, that this sort of negates is your reliance upon the LNG plant as reserve, assuming successful storage. Is that a good conclusion?
Yes, ultimately.
Okay. I mean, when you get there, when you've matured.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, please continue.
A second option that NSTAR has looked at is constructing a peak shaving facility. This was the most expensive cost when we looked into this. We would have to be ordering a tank or the steel for that tank to be built as we speak. We don't believe that this is a good option. It's the most expensive option. It would add about $23 an MCF to the cost of the gas if we were to pursue this as our option. So we've eliminated this at this point. Our third option was if there were to be continued export of LNG from the existing Kenai facility. We've talked with those producers there about the opportunities to be able to both export and divert to storage needs for NSTAR at the same time. We are in discussions right now, not negotiations, excuse me, and we believe that the equipment to do that would be about $5 million. And lastly, if the producers were to opt not to ask for relicensing after the current 2011 period, we would be willing to partner with others to purchase that facility, either to operate as a storage facility for ourselves or to have the producers continue to own it and sell a storage service to NSTAR and perhaps other utilities.
Senator Wagner.
Would you go back to your explanation on your third bullet there?
Is the question?
Go through that again, please. I heard something there that I didn't understand.
Okay. If the plant were to continue exporting, we've talked with them, would there be an ability to export and also turn the equipment around if NSTAR needed additional gas supplies and regasify and sell to NSTAR? So you'd have two operations going on at one time.
Right now, when we talk about the LNG plant diverting.
Wait a minute. Let me ask a question here. But don't they already supply you gas from the plant, or do they supply that gas prior to it getting to the plant at peak demand?
It's diverted before it's okay. Converted to LNG and then regasified. And this would be regas equipment, so they would be able to do that.
Right now, as Colin says, the gas never comes out of a tank for us. They'll divert what hasn't been liquefied yet.
This would be
gasifying.
Okay.
It.
All right, that clarifies it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to bullet three then, and just make sure we get that. I at least have the right conclusion. That bullet three represents an expansion of the LNG capability by some order of magnitude, and you're saying that's about a $5 million cost. Is that for the LNG expansion, or is that just some cost you have for infrastructure?
That's infrastructure. That's the cost of the compression and the regas equipment that we would have to install at the plant.
Okay. Good. Other questions? Okay. Continue, please. Senator Wagner?
Well, let them finish their last bullet, and then I've got a question that kind of pertains to all of these.
Each one. I think we're going to the next slide, so need to...
So, if in fact, you can negotiate a deal with ConocoPhillips to go in and do peak shaving and put the $5 million in there, or some of these other, storage reservoir for $50 million. Will these assets be regulated by the RCA then?
Right now, the utility expects that the storage, whether it's a service that we purchase or something we do ourselves internally, that it would be a regulated activity.
Okay. Please continue.
Developing infield gas storage, this would provide for our seasonal swings. As we talked about a little bit earlier, the more base gas or pad gas you have in the reservoir, the more that it increases the deliverability of that field and could potentially assist with our peak needs. We also have the potential to supplement that deliverability with LNG vaporized from the Kenai plant if the plant continues to export. All of these things would require regulatory approval. It is a new cost to the consumer that they have not experienced before. And right now, those services that we're talking about are currently provided by the producers, and that will shift to NSTAR's obligation in 2011.
Senator Wagner?
Sorry, but I got to ask a lot of questions, Mr. Chairman. You said new cost to consumer. Is that broken down between commercial user, such as companies that generate power, and residential users? And is the, I guess, is the cost the same per MCF to a residential user as it is to a commercial user?
That'll be part of what comes out of the regulation.
In so that is not a determined factor yet?
No, sir.
Okay.
We continue to include this slide, but this is where we talked about building a peak shaver, and as I mentioned earlier, we've eliminated this option as far as storage. When we talk about the details, if the producers were to continue to export LNG from the Kenai plant and elect to provide peak shaving to NSTAR, it would be contingent on DOE authorization of the plant through 2011 and thereafter. We believe it's a reasonable capital and operating expense, and it would add 50 million cubic feet a day of LNG vaporization. Currently, the LNG relicensing that is pending approval allows for 99 BCF of gas to be exported over the next two-year period. The plant, as we know, can be diverted and has helped in peak need situations for the utilities in the inlet. And 3,000 million cubic feet of LNG are available in the tanks after a tanker is filled with each shipment that goes out. And what we understand is you can continue to operate that tank with only 60 million cubic feet in it. So there are some opportunities to be able to divert that LNG into gas.
Colleen, in that respect, does NSTAR have any information that would be anything other than optimistic that the LNG licensing was going to be renewed?
No. I mean, NSTAR supported the renewal through the negotiations of our gas supply contracts, and we have no reason to believe that the current, you know, licensing won't be approved for 2009 through 11.
Right. And then I read some articles about the administration facilitating some, but what they facilitated was essentially the continuation of the practice that was at hand and had been in operation for a number of years. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is.
Okay. Just confirming what was already going on. Okay, good. Thank you. Yes, Senator Wagner.
I hate to go back and forth, but if we're converting LNG, in other words, if we're modifying one of their tanks and we're converting that LNG from LNG back into, and we're regasifying it and putting it in your lines, okay, I understand the $5 million cost. What's the cost per MCF for that process? And that's going to have to be passed through the customer, is it not?
Correct. This is, I don't know if we want to talk about the exact cost of that. I think this option was about $4 an MCF. That's additional cost. I apologize for not having, you know, exact information on those costs. As I said, we've just started to, you know, seriously analyze all of these. I certainly can.
Your conclusion. Yeah, okay, that's good. We appreciate
sure.
that.
Yeah. Peak shaving in the Kenai plant, if the LNG export ceases, if the producers were not to ask to renew their license past the 2011 time frame, we believe there'd be a little over 2 BCF of storage capabilities at the current tanks, and we could modify those, as we've said, for vaporization and add compression and be able to utilize it as a storage facility for NSTAR and other utilities. We've talked to the producers, and in both contracts, there is language that refers to if they do not opt to relicense, that NSTAR would have the ability to possibly negotiate and acquire that facility, or they may be interested in maintaining that facility and providing that service to the utility.
So you would just contract?
Correct. We would contract the storage service from them. And there are costs involved with a purchase that, of course, include your environmental costs, the age of the equipment there, which we're analyzing that, the tanks, grandfathering clauses with the tanks, timing on discontinued export, and we would look to probably partner with other utilities if NSTAR were to purchase that facility for storage.
In that respect, as I recall, the LNG plant in Kenai is the oldest LNG operation in continental United States, or in the U.S.
In the world.
In the world.
That's the first LNG plant.
In the universe.
In the universe.
Okay.
We don't know what they're doing on the space station yet.
That's right.
Senator Wilikowski.
If you were to go through with your gas storage project, how would electric utility gas consumers and residential gas consumers be charged to access that?
That's part of the regulatory process. We don't have a proposal today. I mean, if we develop one way to do this is we would enter into, let's say one of the native corporations took one of these fields and was willing to sell us a service, then what I believe, and I don't have a lawyer with me, is that we'd have to go to the commission and we'd say, here's a service contract that we would buy this service, and this is what it would cost us. And we would probably buy that service on behalf of all of our customers. And then I would assume that if one of the other utilities wanted that service, they would go and contract just as we had, or they could come to us and say, buy more service and provide that service to us. So either of those paths I could see being taken, or perhaps we would purchase the rights to the field and we, NSTAR, would try to develop the storage ourselves and say, here's what we think we can develop it for, here's what we think the cost is. We'd ask the commission to approve our investment to provide that service to our customers.
Is gas storage for utilities a regulated business activity?
Yes.
Yes.
Sometimes it's unregulated, but in many jurisdictions it is regulated.
Thank you.
Okay, continue, please.
So if we take a look at the market and what it looks like, we've moved from the market of excess deliverability to the environment where the deliverability is not meeting the demand. This causes the cost of natural gas to increase. We had an artificial price, and now we've moved more towards a market price. We have a greater portfolio of supply contracts than we've ever had in the past, and they all provide for smaller volumes than the needs. And our pipeline system has become more complicated to operate as a result of all of these contracts and trying to mesh them together and make sure that we are adhering to each contract. As you all know, higher energy costs are not good for the utility. As we talked about, it is a direct pass-through. We don't achieve any additional profit on the gas. That tends also, the higher costs, customers use less of that product. It's also, for the utility, it's caused slower payments, higher bad debt, credit issues, and theft of gas service. And with all of that, customer satisfaction, as all of you probably know when your constituents talk to you about high bills, there's a huge dissatisfaction when those costs increase. To alleviate some of these things, NSTAR believes that we do need some new rate designs, that we think a rate structure that encourages conservation is good public policy. And as we file a rate case later in this year, we'll be looking to put some of those designs in place and bring them before the RCA.
Could you give us a prototypical look at what one of those would look like?
Well, there's a move to what we call, in many jurisdictions in the lower 48, have what they call unbundling the costs. Mm-hmm. And they take it away from a volumetric charge, and they recoup the utility's costs in a flat fee. Similar to what your telephone is or your cable service, it's a flat fee that covers all of the costs. That way, in the colder winter months or for some homes that don't have good insulation, they're not penalized for using more gas. It's a flat fee. They're not penalized on the, if they use more gas, they pay for the commodity, but the volumes, they're not paying for. It's a flat fee.
But how does that encourage conservation? Maybe I'm missing something.
It really encourages the utility to encourage conservation.
Okay,
that's
okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
And it's a better market signal because, you know, right now most of our customers either here in Alaska or Michigan don't really understand what they're paying for the utility and what they're paying for the commodity. This makes it clear to the customer what the commodity costs them and what the utility is costing them.
Yeah, very good.
Have you done any kind of analysis on what that flat fee would be for residential consumers and for businesses?
We're currently in the process of doing that. We have ballpark figures, but we don't have an exact cost.
Are you at liberty to talk about your ballparks?
In Michigan, it was $25 a month for a residential customer.
Yeah. Okay, Colleen, that's your challenge. Yep, Senator Wagner.
I got to go back and ask this question one more time because I think I wrote the answer down wrong. So if you go to ConocoPhillips on their LNG plant and you add equipment that allows you to shave during your peak demands, you said $4 per MCF. Is that just the price of the process, or does that include the price of the gas that is the end of the process? That's just the mechanical portion of regasification.
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
At this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Gene to talk about some long-term goals.
Thank you. We have a map with various pipeline alternatives, and you all probably know more about those than we do. But when we talk about, again, near-term, intermediate-term, and longer-term, and when we started this year, we didn't know near-term how much gas we would have available for how long in our discussions with the producers. Now, as we sit here, we know how much gas we have and for how long a period, and we have no sense from the producers that we talked to that they're going to extend and come up with greater volumes. Certainly today they're unwilling to commit for new volumes past 2013. We also have more of an idea as we sit here about the timing or for the larger line. So where does that leave us? In regard to where we are today, we believe that we need to access the gas on the north slope. That is the really a way that we can assure that the community needs are met. It meets our customers' needs. It meets our needs. It's a solution to knock down the energy cost for the consumers in Fairbanks. It's a way to keep the industrial load in the community and the jobs associated with that industrial load. And really, when we look forward to where we are, we say we need to start making decisions this year because the time that we have has compressed on us instead of getting longer with regard to a resolution of our needs. So, what I think we're going to try to advance in the next few months, we're going to try to flange up the engineering to come back with a proposal to go to the foothills or to Prudhoe Bay with a smaller diameter line to access the gas. We're working with the producers to try to come to agreement such that we would have an agreement that a producer or producers would sell into the line and sell the commodity to us. And we're working with others to flange up the engineering and perhaps in the financing. And with that, I'd like to turn it back to Curtis.
If we could use the term producers, are you free at this point to say who producers are, or is that something we have to wait on?
I think you might have two. This Curtis there with NSTAR. Two questions, or I think that might be two questions. The producers, when we talk in Cook Inlet, The producers in Cook Inlet are Marathon, ConocoPhillips, and Unocal.
Right.
When we talk producers on the slope, when we're looking at more towards the foothills, we're looking at Anadarko. Mm-hmm. As far as the producers on the north slope, we have not had those discussions with the big three.
Okay. So just for clarification, so we all understand, you're looking potentially at sources other than the legacy field areas for the source of the natural gas, potentially.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Wagner, then Senator Green.
You got $3.3 billion, and I realize that's just a back-of-the-envelope calculation right now. Now, is that treated gas from a gas treatment facility that will be done by the producers, or does that include a gas treatment facility that you would build?
Anadarko believes that they've got a dry gas, so that would be a dry gas that's delivered into the line.
Without a conditioning plant. But the foothills gas, like you said, is dry, so there would be no conditioning plant.
How dry? How dry?
Drier than Cook Inlet is what they believe, with Anadarko.
So, so this is optimal gas from everybody's perspective. And ultimately, if it's going to Senator Green's house, it would be less expensive.
Yes.
We would hope. Senator Green.
Yeah, I think Senator Wilkowski may have a question on that question, if he wants to continue.
Sorry,
mine's
follow
on
up.
Another subject.
Okay, yeah, a couple, actually. What would be the size of the line, and what would you anticipate the tariff would be? And also, would you have takeoff points for Fairbanks or elsewhere?
The size of the line would be a half a BCF a day. The tariff really is very much dependent on whether the industrial load continues to be there. And when I say the industrial load, either Agrium or the LNG plant knocks down the tariff significantly for the community. So an ideal situation, you'd have a fertilizer plant and you'd have an LNG export facility, and the tariff, I believe, on the line would be less than $2 if you had that industrial load.
Yeah. So let's repeat that. The industrial demand is important, ultimately, which will render a different cost factor cheaper, if you will, to domestic customers.
Yes.
Okay. That's important, because we're really talking about the preferred customers for natural gas as it comes out of Grand Alaska, and it's Alaskans' preferred customer. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Alaskans are the preferred customers. You have the energy in the community in Anchorage. You have the energy for the communities in Fairbanks and along the line. But the industrial load really anchors that cost.
Right. And just one other point of clarification. If you literally interpret what you're saying, that this as far as gas available for a larger diameter line to go someplace, to let's just say through Canada, for conversation's sake, your course of action does not impact gas available.
It may facilitate it,
right?
Because you don't have the in-state complexities and how much is going to come off and how much is going to affect the tariff on the gas going farther. So, I believe it makes the other solution simpler. I don't see a downside to the larger line.
Right. And the other component that's super important to all of us is you can do this in the near term.
Yes.
You can do it in the near term. That's important to all of us.
It is.
To understand. We can still be designing large pipelines, and you could be delivering gas. I guess another way to say it. Senator Green.
Yeah. My question sort of dovetails on yours, Mr. Chairman. It's under here you have opportunities and benefit. Could you not add on there that this would promote further development of gas fields once you have an established market?
Very good point, yes.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not trying to correct your PowerPoint. I just think it's a very good.
No, I agree. With the accessible in-state markets, when we look at a bullet line, and a good, again, if you were to look at the foothills as being the source, it resolves a lot of the politics around the North Slope and the mm-hmm. producers. Mm-hmm. And we can go right to the foothills. InStar, of course, would be a customer. in time, Chugach Electric, Municipal Light and Power, and they can speak better to that. Now, we say the LNG plant, that could be the Kenai plant. That could be another plant that comes online in addition to or different from the existing plant we have. Of course, Fairbanks Natural Gas would be a customer. You have Agurim possibly coming back in. You also have Fairbanks Power and fuel switching due to the economics, where you have actually a power plants, of course, in South Central are mainly gas-driven, where in the north, in Fairbanks and other areas, they get economy energy sales out of Anchorage that are being limited now due to the supply in Cook Inlet, but they'll be switching from other fuel sources. Same thing in Fairbanks when you look at two military bases in a refinery, and a refinery that uses its own products for its power very easily could use natural gas for that refinery. The advantage of the NSTAR bullet line
Stand by. We have a question for Senator Wilikowski, and if you've calculated it, we'd be happy to hear from you about if you took all those customers you just described, what that total demand would be. But let's go to Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah. Well, I was just curious. How serious is this project? Do you have financial partners? Have you gotten it to the point where it's defined enough that you can hold an open season? Or is this just something that's being theoretically discussed?
I don't believe we have a choice. I think NSTAR, Continental, is committed to this project. I believe that it may take a few months for our various constituencies to embrace this idea. But I believe, as I sit here, that we at NSTAR and the community doesn't have a choice. It may take us a little bit of time to grasp that and all to rally around that. But today, as we sit here, when we talk about importing LNG and importing an occasional cargo and paying the price for an occasional cargo for that, I just don't think that's realistic. And I don't think there's anything realistic about taking gas off the larger line with an uncertain future and uncertain timing if this community is going to have the gas it needs. And when you look at the alternative energy costs, if you don't have natural gas for Fairbanks and Anchorage, you just don't want to go there. So NSTAR is committed to this. You know, we have what we have invested in the community, and that investment doesn't yield us what it needs if we don't have gas to put in our pipes, and the community bears a much bigger cost if you have some kind of alternative fuel for your heating requirements.
We did an analysis in 2006, and if Anchorage or South Central Alaska had a switch to alternative fuel, 2006 prices, the fuel cost alone would be $500 million a year. That means no conversion. That's not conversion cost. That's not trucks on the road. That's just going to fuel oil, which they already do in Fairbanks. Fairbanks Natural Gas charges about $22 an MCF, which is right on par with what they pay for fuel oil for the same BTU content. And that's where in Anchorage we have the lowest prices in the country. With this, as far as the project timeline, you know, a lot of this I think has come together fairly quickly. With hopefully, and a lot of it depends on Anadarko, but they're spending a lot of money in this drilling season and hope to have results in the next couple of months. And they were the one that approached us about our involvement in a transmission line, which we, of course, have great interest in. And we have met with local native corporations in Anchorage, and they, too, want to invest and be a part of this project. So we're trying to bring everybody together, but we're trying to do it through private enterprise.
Very good. Senator Wagner?
I haven't seen a timeline on here. Roughly, what is your timeline? Because if you're talking about building this gas line, you're going to run into a lot of the same time requirements that a 60-inch line would run into. You had to do environmental impact statement. You had to do permitting, things like that. I know you probably, since it's all in state and everything, you'll probably be able to compress that somewhat, but what is your timeline on that?
We think we can get the gas here when we need it. We're committed to spending the resources that we need to finalize in the engineering study, but we believe that we can have the gas here in the 2014, 2014 timeframe.
We're talking about 5 years, 5 or 6 years, plus or minus.
Now, in that respect, if we're talking about gas going to LNG plant, you in fact have to have a full certificate, right? Does that do anything to the timeline?
We build transmission lines. We don't operate LNG facilities.
Understand.
So that would have to be left to the current LNG facility, or if somebody decides to build a different LNG facility.
Right. Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
The alignment, I imagine, goes through Denali National Park?
Yes and no. There are three right-of-ways down the park's highway. You have the inner tie, which goes outside the park boundaries. You have the railroad, and you have the highway itself. The highway and the railroad both go through the park boundaries. Yeah, we have determined that it's about 1,500 feet of the new park boundaries, and we have met with the congressional delegation to find out if we can get something through the 1,500 feet, or we can go around and do the inner tie. And quite frankly, it's a matter of cost. We believe it'd probably be cheaper to go through the 1,500 feet of right-of-way needed in the park. But if we can't get that, then the cost, we pay more and we go a longer route. But that's one of the issues we're looking at. We've done a lot of the right-of-way work with the thinking there would be a spur line from Anchorage to Fairbanks. The component that's been added is now the Fairbanks to the North Slope or to the foothills. So we have a lot of the right-of-way work already done on the park's highway.
And then, if I could, Mr. Chair, so a couple other just kind of cleanup points. I asked about takeoff points before, and if you could answer that. And then compression, are you able to compress it and get three-quarter or even a full BCF per day?
With regard to takeoff points, yes, you could add takeoff points, and with compression, you could add volume.
Okay. And just one more. Are you asking for anything from the state in order to do this? Because under GEA, we have a provision about non-competing lines and state supporting that. And I'm just curious what the tie-in is here, if any, with the GEA.
Our tie-in here is informational. We have no request at this point in time. We just an open mind. I mean, and support, and we're not asking for anything.
Yeah. But important point, you are proposing bringing gas to the preferred customer from essentially foothills down to the Kenai Peninsula. That's an important point for all of us to realize.
Yes.
I mean, this is about Alaska and taking care of Alaskans, and that should be a priority to all of us, to be quite frank.
And one thing I'd like to really point out, in the legislature, and it was this legislature that took the lead on in November during the special session and actually reduce the tax burden for in-state use. We had that cooking inlet exemption in the last PPT bill, and it was the same tax rate, the 22.5, was everywhere else in the state. It killed the Nanana Basin, and they partner pulled out. We've now talked to Doyon. They want to go back. They're looking at it. I don't know the status of their partners, but they have renewed interest. And obviously, Anadarko has renewed interest because of the tax structure. And it was this legislature that did it. So I'm saying, for something you did in October, for us to come here in March and say that we're talking and we think we can get something to you within a year or 2 years, that I'm saying hats off to the legislature, because that's what's made it happen.
Good. We needed an attaboy or an attagirl. Thank you very much. Senator Wilkowski.
And I've solely come to be a real strong believer that we need an in-state gas line, just for the very reasons that the chairman said. We have to look out for Alaskans first. But in terms of how is this going to affect the rates of the gas rate? I mean, I guess that's the real question that Alaskans want to know. Is this going to lower our gas rates if we do this, or if you do this?
We don't, I mentioned we're working on a commitment with the Anadarko, and that they would commit to selling and producing into the line. But hypothetically, if a producer were willing to sell at index minus the transportation, you wouldn't have an impact on price. Either the price would stay similar to what we've got. We're paying an index price. And when you look at, if you talk about anchoring the line with the LNG plant or the fertilizer plant, and what the tariff would be as a result of that in the $2 range, it's not unreasonable to think that we might have an index price, which would be minus the transportation. So really the community would be paying a price that they're paying today.
Unless you live in Fairbanks, you'd be paying less than half
what
you're paying.
You'd be paying a lot less in Fairbanks.
Yeah. Senator Wagner and then Senator Gray.
And I think it's commendable that private industry is looking at this. I know Curtis and I have had some conversation before. But the one thing I wonder about, you've got Agrium listed here. Agrium's currently looking at a coal gasification unit. And I don't know what their current status is on that. I don't think anybody does, other than the fact that they're negotiating for financing and partners at this time. And they're supposed to make an announcement sometime this month or next month about how that process has panned out. So I think if you're looking at 2015 for a line to be down here from North Slope, I don't know for sure, but you know, if that plant sits there for another 7 years without operating, it's going to be pretty questionable about if that's feasible to start that plant back up again. So I'm wondering if that plant really is even in the realm we should be discussing it at this time. I don't know, because I haven't talked to the people at Agrium about that and about how long that plant can sit there. Chris Sonics would know more about that than I would, and so would Lisa Parker. We tried to get together today, and we didn't do it. So I
don't know what their long-term plans are either, but I know after our last trip to Juneau 2 weeks ago, we did receive a call from Agrium. So they are aware of our discussions surrounding an in-state bullet line, and they are interested in talking to us about that. And we will follow up with them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Senator Green?
Yeah, and I think in discussing a future price, or either in the line, out of the line, with the transportation to the consumer, whatever, is nearly, you have to put aside and say the issue is, are we going to have gas?
Exactly.
Is it going to be there? And that's going to be, that's the question.
And to put it in perspective, I mean, you're in fact pioneers. I mean, Fairbanks Natural Gas teamed with Exxon, and we're going to bring it down in trucks to Fairbanks. And in this case, I mean, you are a pipeline factor that can, you know, really deliver a product that will be meaningful for people. I mean, my assumption is hopefully in the headlines of the Daily News tomorrow and on the 5 o'clock report from Bill and whomever, Channel 2 and 1311. So attaboy, attagirl to you also. Please continue.
And I'd like to say one last thing with regard to pricing. And 15 years ago here, when you had more deliverability than you had demand, you had a segment you had a lot of your customers that were getting a lower price, a lower price in terms of relative to index. And in the lower 48, as recently as this year in the Rockies, when you had more deliverability out of the Rockies than you had demand, you were pushing some gas out of the Rockies earlier this year for about $1 an MCF. And we have changed completely that situation here today, where we have much more demand than we have deliverability, and the pricing has flipped on us. Logic tells you, and we don't have any commitments at this point with regard to pricing from the producers, but if you had this line, you'd be back in the situation you were in 15 years ago. You would have way more deliverability than you would have demand at the end of that line. And the reality is, in that situation, you've always had price discounting. You've had a discount at the end of the line. And that's really the situation we'd like to get back to. We'd like to have more deliverability at the one end than we have demand at the other end.
That's interesting you mention that, because as I recall in Wyoming, before the Rocky Mountain Express was pioneered through, that there was gas at 50 cent for some period of time.
Exactly.
50 cent.
Yes.
And that's within the last single-digit number of years,
yes.
4 or 5 years.
Exactly. That's the situation.
Yeah. Good for us. Whoa, we're going to be heroes.
We have Kurt Gibson with the gas team. He's joined us about 45 minutes ago. Welcome, Kurt. Good to have you. Please continue on. We're not rushing, but we are time constrained.
I think right now this is our last slide. And that is, again, we've discussed the long-term supply solution for South Central Alaska. It's not mutually exclusive with a pipeline to Lower 48. We've talked about the Agrium, the extending the Kenai LNG plant, the opportunities it could create in South Central Alaska and in Fairbanks. In-state markets will qualify for the lower tax burdens. And again, it's the stable end-user pricing for South Central Alaska. And hopefully it's going to ensure sufficient well-held prices for exploration and development, not only on the North Slope and the foothills, but continue in Cook Inlet. And I think one thing is we have talked to the administration about this. We're continuing to meet with them on this. And I think they're just as happy and pleased as you are that this project is looking like it is moving forward. And I want to thank you.
Yeah, and let's just go to your bullet. Says could create opportunities for gas-based industrial growth. You know, when I think of petrochemical industry sort of things, you know, and there, I mean, I assume the administration is working on some of that to mature it at a point where it would be germane to your pipeline delivering. But I mean, what a bang for the state of Alaska in the job market that would be there in the rekindling. Senator Wilikowski.
And I think you kind of hit on what I was thinking, Mr. Chair. But and my question is, if you know, we want this, we want to take maximum advantage of this. Is a half BCF maybe compressed up to 3/4? Is that enough gas if we do decide for all the utilities for Fairbanks? Maybe we put some into propane to ship to the bush. Ideally, we would. And also for a petrochemical industry, have you done an evaluation on that?
No, with regard to the petrochemical industry, that isn't our core competency. And you know, if we can make the project work with a kind of keep it simple, stupid approach, and then if those things start to mature and it gets better, that's great. But I think within our capability, I think what we can do is we can deliver this line and we can get the gas to the community without adding a lot of complexity. I believe what you're referring to will happen if the project starts to take off, that the other opportunities will mature if you can get that supply and get it at perhaps a discount, that other industrial use will take off, but we can't count on that. We have to make it work without that.
And then just one other question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Have you had discussions with ANGDA? I know ANGDA is looking into similar vote lines. And I'm just wondering, has there been any interplay there? Is one line better than another? I know you're going to say your line's better, but discussions?
I'm not going to say anything's better. All I can say is what we can do. I mean, and what can we do to get the community the gas that we need, and we think we can do this project. And that's why I say my approach is kind of keep it simple, stupid. You know, how can we get this done? And I think that what we feel is we can get it done like this, and therefore we've tried to keep a focus, and we think that this project will go forward.
Yep, Senator Wagner.
Well, in the first place, we talked about propanes and stuff. This gas is as dry as they say it is. There isn't going to be any propanes there. So this may involve, and I don't know what the administration is doing either. I've been talking, I gave you the name of a gentleman that is interested somewhat, or was, in a petrochemicals plant. But that dealt with ethanes. But there's no reason they couldn't bring a line, extend a line from Puto down to intersect this and put ethanes in line, then have a straddle plant someplace to take that back out. And if you did that, then you get the propanes too. So there are some feasible things to be done if this
it's
thing gets laid.
70 miles.
Yeah.
So what is 70 miles from the foothills up to the
Yeah.
That's my question. I have prompter just brought to me here. That's
not a big deal.
Yeah. Senator McGuire.
Yeah, I was just going to remind the committee of the Nutricity proposal that we had, I think it was in 04. Company that came from Silicon Valley, and their whole specific reason was low-cost energy. They were looking at relocating their headquarters and their database warehouse here in Alaska. And so there are going to be some exciting opportunities.
I hope we give you enough credit for how grateful we are for what you're proposing to us. And, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I would certainly partner up to make you successful, because a lot of people will be happy based on your being successful. I'm sorry, you have one more slide.
This is just who we're working with, ASRC, Agram, Anadarko. And when we say Armstrong, Armstrong is still looking for gas in Lower Cook Inlet, which is more of a short term, but we're working with them. Siri, Chevron is one of our producers. Of course, Chugach Electric, our fellow utility, ConocoPhillips, Doyon with the Nanana Project, Municipal Light and Power, Marathon, and then also Michael Baker Engineering. Again, we want to look to optimize the mix of energy supply operations or options to Alaska, and that's what we're here to do.
And you mentioned Native Corporation. Siri was the corporation you were
talking about. Siri and ASRC are the two that we are, okay, we're yes. working and talking with right now. And we've talked with Doyon, too, about the Nanana Basin.
Okay. Other questions or comments from committee members? I would like to recognize when Gene said, keep it simple, stupid, it reminded me that, how long you been with us now, Gene?
I've been coming up here for the last 6 years now.
Last 6 years. Well, Gene's a Naval Academy graduate, and when you said KISS, or keep it simple, stupid, remind me of that. So thanks for the Naval Academy exporting you to help us.
Who do you think he was talking to, Mr. Chairman?
Well, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. On behalf of Alaskans, you know, we want to be facilitators of your success and potentially partnering. And thank you very much, and keep us informed.
Yes, sir.
And good luck in your endeavor. With that,
we are adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Great.